Ladies and gentlemen, two girls, two boys, a phenomenon in pop music. ABBA.
Hello and welcome to this very special one-off episode in which we celebrate the 50th anniversary of ABBA winning the 1974 Eurovision Song Contest in Brighton with, of course, Waterloo. Now, this episode is following a slightly different format to normal. Obviously, we normally talk about two songs per episode, two songs off an album. We're not actually going to talk about Waterloo the song in this episode. We're going to save that for when we do Waterloo the album. Instead, I've got an interview with a very special guest coming up. And then after that, we're going to do a look back into some of the newspaper archives to find out what people were saying about the Eurovision Song Contest at the time. Obviously, get in touch on the socials. You know this by now, I'm sure. Instagram at likeamagicspell and email is likeamagicspell@gmail.com. I love to hear your feedback, as long as it's positive, of course. If you've got anything nasty to say, then yeah, just don't bother. Thanks. Thanks very much. But I do genuinely love to hear from you all. Obviously been a bit quiet because we haven't had a series ongoing, but I'll come back at the end of the podcast and let you know what the future plans are. Spoiler alert, there's a new season coming. But first of all, we have our very special interview with our very special guest. Now, Lorraine Bowen is a singer, comedian and songwriter. She's also a huge TV star thanks to appearing on Britain's Got Talent a few years ago. You might remember that she sang her infamous Crumble song and she now defines herself as the Crumble Lady. She really leans into it, which is fantastic. I've known about Lorraine for quite a long time. I remember hearing her on Radio 4 years ago on the John Shuttleworth programme. And I was intrigued to find out that she actually runs singing workshops. And I saw that she was running one at the Brighton Dome, which, of course, is where ABBA won Eurovision. And she was running an ABBA singing workshop there a few weeks ago. So I paid my money, went along, stood in a room at the Brighton Dome with 23 complete strangers and Lorraine. And what a wonderful day. We did about 8 ABBA songs. We did a little performance at the end. The whole thing was so interesting to kind of get to grips with the songs and really appreciate them from a different angle. I think I said on the day, I'm very much a car singer, so I'll sing when I'm driving in the car where no one else can hear me. But to actually be in a room with others, some of whom were as nervous as me about actually singing out loud, was fantastic. It was a wonderful experience, and all sort of through the lens of ABBA as well. So it was this whole, it was such a strangely surreal day, but Lorraine was a fantastic teacher. Thoroughly recommend her workshops. And she very kindly gave me some time after the workshop to have a quick chat about the joy of singing ABBA. So I've got this interview coming up with her, and she began by telling me about the impact that ABBA had on Britain at the time.
I'm going to be plain. I'm old enough to know what it was like when ABBA came along on the radios. Remember, we're talking early 70s, aren't we? That's the thing. So what had we had before that? You know, we'd had late 60s, it was still Beatles. We hadn't done punk, we hadn't done anything. Suddenly this kind of denim-clad foursome from Sweden came along on TV. I mean, it was just very odd. It was very un-British in a way, because they were from another country. But they came and just hit us with these tunes. And it was, people still had tiny little radios in their kitchens, and they just were phenomenal because the tunes are so good. They're classic, brilliant songs, lots of repetition, great lyrics, very steadfast lyrics that hit you and just say simple, brilliantly profound things in a few sentences. Is that what you feel?
Yeah, definitely. And if someone said to me, what's the appeal of ABBA in, say, one word, I'd go with simple or simplistic. But once, I mean, as we've just discovered in the workshop, once you actually get to them, they're very layered, aren't they? They're very quite complicated and so well constructed.
Yes, I think today we found that some sections, I think the Gimme 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 A Man After Midnight, we've got so many different layers of tune they're almost like folk songs sometimes, and then they go off somewhere else, and then there's these complicated chords underneath. And it's just, the whole thing's pretty brilliant. And I was reading up about Benny and Bjorn.
Yeah.
Their songwriting didn't just happen overnight. Oh, my goodness. I didn't know they were born around 1945. So by the time of the 70s, they were already 30-something. Mm. They'd just been loads and loads of bands.
Yeah. And they'd done a lot of touring as well. They'd done lots of touring around Europe. They were already, well, very famous. And that adds to the kind of the allure of the group. It was almost like a supergroup forming, because you had all four of them were famous in their own right, actually, when they all came together as ABBA.
Yes, but it did not happen overnight. I didn't realise that the blonde, I can't say her name, the blonde lady...
Agnetha.
She was huge in her own right. She'd written a couple of albums, hadn't she?
Yeah, solo albums. Since quite young as well.
Did she write the songs, then, I wonder? Oh, she did. Yeah. God, see, they're so amazing. I'd love to... I just want to know what it was like in that rehearsal studio, getting the songs together. I'd love to know the dynamics of the group. It was so perfect in its day. I think that's another thing about ABBA. It was quite perfectly produced. Mm. And I don't think we'd heard songs arranged like that. And some of them have got kind of synth bottoms. And that was very, very new in its time.
Of course, we're here sitting in the Brighton Dome where they won Eurovision. Do you remember the night?
I don't think I was into Eurovision. As a kid. I do remember the outfits, though. The outfits blew our brains because polyester, of course. Well, we didn't have a lot of polyester before that. People laugh now, but, you know, Britain was very, very much cotton, linen, wool. Suddenly, we saw this woman with blonde hair looking absolutely amazing with blue eyeshadow. I mean, God, the eyeshadow companies must have made a fortune after that. With this blue, quite tight suit with pantaloon bottoms. I mean, it's just overwhelming, really. It was just amazing. It definitely blew our brains at the time.
Is there anything about ABBA songs that you think lend themselves to a workshop? Do you know what I mean? So is it that there's a range of songs that can release people's singing talents?
Yes, I think that today I had a lady who said, oh, my God, what's the one that we did without...
I Have a Dream?
Yes, I Have a Dream. She said, I'm going to sing this every day. I'm going through a real rough patch, and this has just really helped me this afternoon. So that's lovely. I Have a Dream. So all those words, I believe in angels. It's just so joyous, isn't it? It is semi-religious almost, that song.
When we got to sing that note, I remember when we were talking about it, you know, I believe in angels, for want of a better phrase, it sort of ramps up.
It does.
I know when you were talking us through it, you say, you sort of look to
the sky.
It makes you feel you're going up.
It does. Well, it's word painting, that's what it is, lyric painting. You know, last night I sang The Messiah, unbelievable. Hallelujah, you know, as the lyrics talk about going higher, the melody goes higher. That is a great song, you know. I love the idea of repeating something three times as well. I do, gimme, or Waterloo. Keep going, yeah. Waterloo. It's great. That's another appeal, I suppose.
And if I had to press you for your favourite ABBA song, what would that be?
I'm going to say Dancing Queen, because it's got an extended range of a tenth. It starts, Friday night and the nights are low. Dancing Queen! I mean, it really is euphoric by the end, isn't it? At the time, it was bonkers. It still is. Can you imagine all these years later, it's always sung at hen parties, at weddings. It's just a number one song.
I think I've said this on the podcast before, but when that first chord rings out, it's like a siren call, isn't it?
It is.
You know, and people just gravitate towards it.
It's just perfectly arranged. I think they were very good sound engineers as well, so they understood the EQ of a radio and what's needed on the highs, the mediums and the lows.
Yeah,
and that piano.
Ta-ding,
ta-ding, ta-ding. Everything's got a hook in it as well.
Mm. We were dealing with record players and radios back then, where we got sort of high-quality CDs, but So you needed something that was very distinct and very that cut through, I
suppose. Yes. So you've got, I suppose there's guitars. I never really hear the guitar. I never think of ABBA as a guitar band. It's more, I always hear the piano, but then that's me.
Well, there are certain albums where the guitar is there, but you can't hear it. And then there are certain songs where the guitar is there and you can hear it. And there's one song, I completely forget which one, but there was a guitar solo. And it just sounds a bit, it sounded very out of place.
With
everything sort of thrown into the mix. And sometimes the mix doesn't quite work, but everything is there.
And of course, you know, harmonies a go-go, aren't they? Harmonies a go-go on an ABBA song. And that, you know, it affects the human spirit. People love hearing a good anthemic chorus with harmonies. What's wrong with that? It's fantastic.
So that was Lorraine Bowen. Huge, huge thanks to Lorraine. And thanks to the staff at the Dome for being so helpful to arrange everything. When I was being shown out, I shouldn't really tell you this, but when I was being shown out, I did ask if I could just sneak into the auditorium and take a quick picture because I wanted to see where ABBA had won the Eurovision. I'll put the picture on the socials. It's not the best picture in the world. It's just a picture of the inside of a theatre. But I know, you know, it's the Dome where ABBA won Eurovision. So it's very special. And do check out the Brighton Dome website for all of their ABBA-related activities this weekend. They've got quite a few things going on this coming weekend as I record this. So that's the weekend of the 6th and 7th of April, 2024. So yeah, they've got lots of things going on. I'll put a link in the show notes and I'll put a link to Lorraine's website in the show notes as well. So next on this very, very special anniversary one-off podcast, I'm going to be looking at some of the newspaper articles that were around at the time of the Eurovision Song Contest in 1974. So I'm indebted to previous guest Ian Jones for helping me with the scour of the archives for all of these articles. It's thrown up some really fascinating kind of insights really into the contest and some sort of slightly spiky reviews and a little bit about what ABBA were up to after the contest. So I'm going to dive straight in. So this first one we found was from the Daily Mirror on the 19th of March, and the headline is "Police Raise Their Batons." I'm just going to read out sort of selected extracts from these articles. So it starts with, and I should say that Olivia Newton-John, of course, was the UK entry in 1974. This one says, "Police raise their batons."
Our own Olivia Newton-John and all those other pretty warblers taking part in the Eurovision Song Contest in Brighton next month will get more police protection than was given to Mr. Harold Wilson or Mr. Edward Heath at their political party conference in the resort. Explains Brighton Corporation, with singers coming from ERA and Israel, security obviously has to be stiffer than ever. All attending will have to be officially accredited. Men will wear a photograph of themselves pinned to their lapels. Women will wear theirs round their necks. At a previous contest, a woman wearing an identity pin on her bosom fell over and spiked herself. When they picked Brighton for the song contest, the BBC didn't realise there would also be a big pharmaceutical conference in the town. The chemists have booked the whole of the Metropole and its conference hall. The BBC have managed to book the Grand and Bedford hotels for the 350 official delegates, but they can't find enough rooms with baths for the camp followers who inevitably turn up at the song contest.
So that was, yeah, a couple of weeks before the contest on the 19th of March. This next one is from the Kent Evening Post on the 21st of March. The headline is "European Swan Song?" It goes on to talk about the expense of holding the contest because, of course, Luxembourg won in 1973 and couldn't afford to host it again. That's why it was in Brighton in 1974. A few interesting quotes kind of leapt out from this article. One from an organiser of the Brighton contest. It says,
"Every year, going back to 1956 when it all started, the critics have said that the contest is doomed to failure. But every year, bar none, the competition has gone from strength to strength. The number of televiewers, number of competing countries and songs proves that finding a top song is just as big an attraction as finding Miss World. Already the traditional rows have started. Some have once again predicted the end of the contest. Others have said that the contest merely throws up rubbishy songs. But not everyone knocks it. Valerie Avon and Harold Spiro, who co-wrote the British song entry, Long Live Love, know that if they have a winner, record sales around the world will top the million mark. Valerie, the first woman writer of a British song for Europe, says, "It's so glib and easy to dismiss the contest as rubbish, but it's a commercial exercise. You write songs to suit the market, and there's intense nationalistic pride in the contest. It runs right through the competing countries."
And it's interesting to see that even in 1974, all those same complaints about the song contest were coming up and being suitably dismissed. This next article is from the Manchester Evening News on the 2nd of April 1974, so a few days before the contest. The headline is "Security Screen for the Euro Song Stars."
The countdown to Saturday's Eurovision Song Contest at Brighton's famous Dome began today with security checks, identity cards and metal detectors. It was more like a political summit conference than a pop parade. Police and independent security guards equipped with walkie-talkie radios were more in evidence than singing stars. Most contestants will not arrive until tomorrow, but the BBC and Sussex Police were taking no chances. The small army of technicians transforming the former Royal Stables into a TV theatre, from which the contest will be beamed to 500 million viewers, were ordered to wear identification cards on their lapels. Reporters' briefcases were searched and they were screened by metal detectors before signing in. Outside in the flowering gardens, all roads leading to the Dome were barred to traffic. Only official accredited vehicles were allowed near the building. The stringent security has been ordered by officials aware that the event includes singers from politically sensitive countries like Israel, Greece, Ireland, Spain and Portugal. When the contestants arrive, they will find a town that is trying hard to get into the Eurovision mood. Rail travellers from London were able to sit back and listen to tapes of the 18 rival songs as they sped through the Sussex countryside. And Radio Brighton is laying on two special European news bulletins every morning this week. A spokesman said, "Our programmes are being piped to all the main hotels for the foreign visitors. Brighton Corporation is entering into the spirit of things by helping to stage a reception for the visiting singers later in the week."
So this next one is actually from the day after the contest, so the 7th of April. It's The Observer, which was, of course, a Sunday newspaper. And you can tell that it was written and filed on the Saturday before the result was known because it doesn't mention who won it. So it was obviously written before they knew that ABBA had won it. Nonetheless, it gives quite an interesting picture into Brighton in the week leading up to it. So it's talking about the security and it's got a quote from somebody and it says,
"Put it this way," said a constable cheerily dismantling a press camera at the door of the Dome, scene of this year's Songfest. "You've got your Israelis, your Irish, your Greeks and your work cut out. Even with proper accreditation and an identity card, every artist, technician, pressman and caterer had to pass through metal detector screens each time he entered the building. Earlier in the week, one of the lighting technicians installing the £20,000 worth of equipment strolled out onto the roof for a breath of fresh air and set off all the alarm systems. One taxi driver complained that the bleeding song for Europe might be bringing the town £1 million worth of publicity and spending money, but it was no joke transporting four Israeli singers to their hotel with armed police cars in front and behind."
And from the same newspaper, this is Clive James in his TV column about the Eurovision Song Contest. It's a very long column, so I won't read it all, but it's a fascinating snapshot, as all of these are. So Clive James says,
"Representing Sweden were ABBA, a two-girl and two-man outfit with a song called Waterloo. This one was built on a T-Rex riff and delivered in a Pickety Witch style that pointed up the cretinous lyric with ruthless precision, 'Waterloo could have escaped if I wanted to.' The girl with the blue knickerbockers and silver boots and the clinically interesting lordosis looked like being the darling of the contest. As the girls clattered off in their ill-matching but providentially chosen clobber, their prospects looked unnervingly good. The hook of their song lasted a long time in the mind, like a kick in the knee."
So it's fair to say Clive James not a huge fan of the contest. This is from the Cambridge Evening News on Monday, the 8th of April, 1974. It's an article. The headline is "Even Olivia Didn't Like Her Song." It focuses on Olivia Newton-John, the British entry, coming fourth, and then afterwards saying she didn't really like her song. She wanted to sing something else, but she didn't really care because she was going on tour in America later that week. There's an interesting section about ABBA, which I'll read out. So it says,
"Nearly 300 journalists from all over Europe have to fight to talk to the Swedish winners, the ABBA group, in a brief after-contest conference. Then the young Swedish group bounce onto stage and the squeeze to get them becomes a furious, sweaty crush. A table of photographers are standing on cracks and an Italian disappears into a stack of chairs with a flourish of colourful oaths. ABBA are happy and, for a group who've been working since early morning, remarkably fresh. Anna, their beautiful blonde singer, wrinkles up her nose for the photographers. Frida smiles and the flash guns catch the glitter still on her cheeks. The two men, Bjorn and Benny, talking English to banks of microphones and faces. Well, although we're influenced by Gary Glitter and that sort of music visually, I personally prefer music by people like Frank Zappa, something more avant-garde, explains Bjorn. Brighton hasn't exactly gone bonkers over their role as hosts for the Eurovision Musical Circus. An ambitious plan by the GPO to dress postmen in national costumes fizzled out at the press release stage.
And this one is from the same day, the 8th of April 1974, and this is the Coventry Evening Telegraph. This is the TV column by Anthony Davis. Again, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it does say this.
But whatever one thought of the songs, which were at best unmemorable, at least they provided respite from David Vine's commentary. For it was only during the singing that he kept quiet during the whole 105-minute programme, about which I complain only because he persists in the manner of an aggressive car salesman trying to flog an old banger.
And this next one we're looking at is the Liverpool Daily Post on the same day, Monday the 8th of April. It's the television column written by someone called Sue Sellers. And the headline is, Bring on the Euro Womble. And Sue starts,
Justice was done at the Eurovision Song Contest. The winning song was pretty awful, but it was the only one that was remotely like a modern pop song. And the Swedish group who sang it were the only singers who looked like a modern pop group. Patriotism aside, I think Olivia Newton-John was a cut above the rest. She looked pretty and did the best she could with her uninspiring material. But if we really want to win, may I suggest we enter the Wombles next year? If the Womble song, by far the catchiest tune played that evening, is anything to go by, they have much more musical judgment in their furry little fingers than the whole of the 17 Eurovision composers.
And for this next one, we're back to the Manchester Evening News on the 10th of April. This is actually a letter to the newspaper from F.C. Johnson, Platt Court Rushholme, who says,
I'm sure that I express the dismay and disappointment of many of your viewing readers at the selection of that awful song from Sweden in the Eurovision Song Contest. Winning songs of quality and merit have been conspicuous by their absence from this contest over the years, with only a handful of notable exceptions, and most have passed into thoroughly deserved oblivion, the inevitable destiny of most of the trash churned out today and seriously presented as music. The only motivation that produced the vote on the Eurovision Song Contest was one of commercial viability, manifested no doubt by the votes of the younger members of the various panels. Though the general standard was not outstanding, there were one or two songs which could have got more support for merit and content than the winner.
Safe to say, not another fan of the Eurovision Song Contest or of ABBA winning. And the last one we're looking at today is from the Belfast Newsletter on the 20th of April, so a couple of weeks after the contest. And the headline is Eurovision Group Hopes to Shake Off That Fishy Image. And it talks about a quick interview with Bjorn. So it says,
Bjorn told me after their victory with Waterloo that, quote, it was specially marvellous to win because we did what we wanted to do. Every year, the same sort of song wins the Eurovision Song Contest, and many of them are hits simply because of this, and not because they are any good. We thought it was time for a change, and luckily the voters agreed with us, but I think Waterloo would have been a success even if we had not won. Bjorn is married to blonde Agneta, known as Anna, and Benny is engaged to Annifrid, brackets Frida, so they have more in common than their work. In fact, after Bjorn and Anna were married, the Swedish public was treated to what almost amounted to a running commentary in the press on their attempts to have a child. Bjorn admits, it's true we tried for 4 or 5 years without success, but 14 months ago we had a daughter, her name is Linda. One fishy thing about ABBA is that in Sweden, when people think of their name, they think of herring. It's not a red herring, it's just that the ABBA Herring Company is known throughout Sweden and its name is synonymous with herring. With their Eurovision win, however, ABBA, the group, are hoping to shake off their fishy image. ABBA, the herring company, are said to be quite happy about the extra publicity they're getting. What's Next for ABBA? In the first weekend after the contest, their record company pressed 100,000 extra copies of Waterloo and printed 10,000 special posters featuring the group. Apart from their records, ABBA says British television appearances are in the pipeline and they leave shortly for a 3-week tour of Europe. Their sights are really set on America because that is the next logical step and they want to prove that they really are Europe's answer to the Mamas and the Papas.
So I hope you enjoyed the interview with Lorraine. She was tremendous fun. Hope you enjoyed the little snapshot into how the British press covered the contest, how they covered the atmosphere in Brighton, and of course their first glimpse of ABBA. Lots going on to mark the 50th anniversary. If you're listening to this on the day it comes out, you've still got a few days to go. I'm going to put a link in the show notes to an article by Ian Cole. Now, Ian Cole is an author I quote in most episodes of the podcast. He's done a really good article summarizing all, and I do mean all, of the anniversary television and radio programs, not just in the UK but around the world. It's a fantastic read, so I'll put a link to that in the show notes. Myself, I'm actually going to ABBA Voyage on Saturday on the actual anniversary for their special Waterloo anniversary spectacular. I don't really know at this moment exactly what is going to be there and how it's going to be Waterloo themed, but I will be reporting back and I'll be putting stuff on the Like a Magic Spell Instagram account so you can find out what it was like. I imagine it's going to be amazing. So, news about future episodes of the podcast. So, obviously, we've done Super Trooper. The next album I've chosen to look at is ABBA the Album from 1977/78, depending on where you were in the world when it was released. So, I've started to record some of those episodes. They will be coming out fairly soon. I'm not going to give a date, but again, keep an eye on the socials for the actual date. So, and it goes without saying that I have some amazing guests lined up for the second season of the podcast. So, get revising. Get listening to ABBA the Album on repeat and get yourself ready for that series. And finally, my thanks again to Lorraine Bowen, to Ian Jones and to the Brighton Dome staff for their contributions to this episode. Couldn't have done it without any of you. Fantastic. Thank you. And I will see you all very soon.